Good day to you one and all, and welcome to Justin Hawkins Rides Again, the podcast where every week I discuss the pitfalls of the music industry and what it's like working in this fickle and preposterous trade. Today is all about music journalism. I'm speaking with my good friend Pat Carty, one of my favourite music journalists of all time, and we'll discuss the pitfalls of the music industry from his perspective and what the role of a music journalist actually is. What I loved about this podcast is the fact that I think in the course of the conversation you can actually hear the friendship and the dialogue between two people who really know each other pretty well. And it's quite difficult to stay on topic in those instances. But when Pat is focused, he's really interesting, and he knows a lot about the music trade. And I really appreciate his perspective. And probably my favourite piece of wisdom that he shared was that there's no such thing as guilty pleasure. It's very unusual for a music journalist to have that sort of perspective, really, because I think a lot of the time music journalists are only concerned with what's cool and what's going to sell the magazine that they work for. So having said that, listen to everything he says. He's brilliant. Please, to enjoy. Again. Good day to you one and all. It is I, Justin Hawkins, and this is Justin Hawkins Rides Again. Today, we're talking to somebody from the music trade, or deep within the music trade, behind the curtain. The bit that we don't often see.
Behind the velvet rope.
Indeed, yes. He's my favourite music writer, a critic, a warrior, a poet, a lover.
Very much so.
Yes. He's just one of my favourite people. It's Mr. Pat Carty. Regard.
Hello, everybody. How are you doing? It's right. Great to be here.
And give us radio personality as well, actually.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Give us the theme tune, Justin.
Okay, here we
quick.
Go. Oh, it's awful. Justin Hawkins. Nope. Oh, it is.
Nothing new there.
Let me do it. Or join in.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay.
Justin Hawkins
rides again. Who do you think I am? Bill Withers. Get on with it.
Beautiful. All right, so normally on these long-form podcasts, we talk about the pitfalls of the music trade.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there are a few people better positioned to remark on those things than one of the gatekeepers themselves, because I think you have quite a lot of responsibility, ooh, don't you?
What happens? I have a lot of what, sorry?
Responsibility. I feel like you're, because you could make or break, you could crush somebody's career with some choice words, couldn't you?
Well, you see, you've always overestimated my reach and influence.
What are you talking about?
Because I've always voted favorably for the Darkness and their Darkness releases. So you assume, based on that, that God, that must be a powerful guy. I mean, have you ever noticed a spike in sales in the Irish market when I've said something about the Darkness?
I am not privy to such information, but I would imagine that just like if to be deigned, you know, thumbs up worthy by Mr. Pat Carty from Hot Press. And who else do you write for these days?
Yeah, I've branched out recently. So I also contribute to the Business Post on a Sunday, the Sunday Times, the Irish edition of that. I've also been in the Irish Independent, the Irish Times, and recently, Classic Rock magazine in your very own UK.
Yeah,
and I also turn up on the radio on various shows as well, and I have my own show, as you know.
Yes,
on a
we're
going
to put
here
links to all that stuff.
Are you sure there'd be enough space?
That'd
be
an awful lot of links. You might have to scroll down a bit to get to that stuff, because I've got a few of my own things going on as well. But
I'm available for all that. What's that stuff you do with the where people dial up and you say happy birthday to them and all that for
Cameo? Why didn't you get on Cameo? Actually, I'll recommend you on Cameo, yeah, and then I can have a small.
How much do you think I could charge? How much could I get away with?
That is a good question. Let's ask our viewers to remark what sort of price. I mean, and
there'll be a lot of this, will there?
I expect so. Yeah, but I don't know. I reckon you'd because you're like the triple threat, aren't you? You.
Quadruple.
Well, yeah, quad fret, because obviously you're a great dancer. We've seen you dance.
That's true.
On stage true with Chic, right? You're one
that's
of Chic's.
That's right. I appeared at the Electric Picnic with Chic as I was specially requested by Nile Rodgers to actually, it wasn't Nile Rodgers, but it was their drummer.
It was this version of Chic that doesn't have Nile Rodgers in it.
No. Nile was there, all right, because there was a lot of people on stage. But as you'll know from the clip that you saw, I made sure to push my way to the front where all the cameras were.
Yeah. And, there were people next to you sort of complaining about bad ribs and stuff afterwards. It was weird. Well,
I've never seen this at a Chic show before, but there was that big old hook that they used to have in the Goon show that came in from the side about halfway through.
Yeah.
A glorious moment.
I enjoyed
a glorious
that, moment. Though. I mean, so just to recap, dancer, yeah. Writer.
Yeah, that's right.
Musician?
Not really, but yeah, okay.
Well, I think you play and sing. We've done some performances together.
We have.
And what's the fourth one I was going to say? Swimmer? I don't know. Radio personality.
That's right. Yes. So, you know. And now... YouTube personality.
Oh, at last. Mm. I'm so happy to...
Yeah, we'll come back to that at last.
Awesome. All right, well, I'm going to ask you some questions because, you know, that's what we do.
Okay.
Okay, so...
So, hold on a second. Let's just get some ground rules here first.
Okay.
Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah, you can swear.
Right.
You can swear.
But I can't sing anybody's songs because we'll be thrown off straight away. Isn't that right?
If you do like a horrible version of a song that's unrecognisable... The algorithm probably won't spot it.
If I sang a song by a band that are named after the national bird of the United States, we'd probably get
called don't
off
do that.
Fairly quick.
Please don't do
that.
All right. Okay, so I'm going to ask you questions that are related to the things that we normally talk about here. What do you think, in your humble opinion, are the biggest pitfalls of the music trade from the perspective of, I don't know. I mean, maybe have you experienced pitfalls in your endeavours to become the greatest journalist alive?
Oh, yeah, plenty, yeah.
What sort of stuff?
Plenty. I don't know. I have to be careful about what I say here now because I don't know who will be watching this. This isn't like the old days when we used to do these behind closed doors. Expand on what you're asking me there.
I suppose, because I think if you're an artist or you're a singer or you're a songwriter or whatever, the pitfalls of the music trade are things like coming to terms with life on the road, coming to terms with life off the road, trying to get your music heard in the first place, finding your audience, all these things are littered with pitfalls, addiction, all that kind of stuff as well. And I wondered what if there's anything similar to that in the world of journalism and the wacky, the zany
well,
world.
I suppose,
of,
to put it kindly and politely, there are gatekeepers in this as well. There are certain publications in Ireland that I have knocked on the door of quite a few times, and some people have opened the door after several knocks and said, "Oh yeah, okay, come in and sit down and try not to make a mess, and we'll see how you get on." And some people haven't even really taken the time to go and see who's at the door, even answer the knocking. I haven't even warranted an FO from them.
Which doesn't sound dissimilar to what it's like to be, you know...
I suppose.
You know, sending demos to record companies and then never getting anything back, or the scout doesn't even bother to listen to them.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the main pitfall at the moment is, as a journalist, I suppose, as a freelance journalist, I might add, I do get sent a lot of music. You know, a lot of stuff arrives in emails every day, some more professional than others. Also, stuff comes in for the radio show, and I try and listen to as much of it as I can.
Do you?
But there's only... I do, honestly, yeah.
So when you're the gatekeeper, you're actually open-heartedly checking stuff out?
I try and give it a go. I mean, it's impossible to listen to it all. It's just not possible. And obviously, the big names are going to catch your eye and your ear, first of all.
So the thing is, what do people, like if it's an up-and-coming band, why would they send you a thing in the first place?
Well,
what are they hoping for?
I guess they either want to be, maybe, they're hoping to maybe be featured in one of the publications. I don't do as much music stuff as I used to. I do a lot of book stuff now as well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's a different story altogether. Thanks. But the music stuff, you know, that say Hot Press, just using it as an example. Every Friday, I think it is, they have a kind of a new Irish music feature. Mm-hmm. And so they put together a playlist and, you know, write a few lines about whoever it is. So I'm sure that's still maybe something that the bands want to get into just to have their music heard.
Yeah.
And then it's the same with the radio show, even though it's only, as I say, on a local radio station. I get emails in saying, hey, I have a new single coming out next Friday. I'd love you to take a listen. And they always have that, and tell me what you think. They don't want to know what you think. They don't want to know what you think. Yeah. They certainly don't want to know what I think. But they're hoping maybe to get a play. And I have played some of it. I have played some stuff like that that's been unsolicited.
Have you ever found yourself in a position where somebody said to you, oh, tell me what you think, and then have you replied and said, like, okay, for this amount of money, I think it's shit. For this amount of money, I think it's all right. And for this amount of money, it's 10 out of 10.
What, you're saying if they give me this amount of money?
Yeah, if they, like, so... I mean, is there ever a temptation to say, well, look, I can't really... Well, honestly, again, say it's for me, but I'll give you a good review for a bit of cash.
I refer you back to my earlier answer about you're overestimating my reach. I think if I was...
Okay, well, it might be 40 quid for a great review, 30 quid for a reasonable one, 20
no,
quid...
No, I've never been offered money at all, to be honest with you, but I haven't. And sorry, I did look away there, but I should be looking at you. I've never been offered money at all. maybe, and I don't know this, and I'm not pointing fingers at anybody at all, but maybe if I had a show on, say, the equivalent of Radio 1 here or something, maybe, then maybe something like that would come up, like the old payola scandal from the 50s. Maybe then, because... If I was to play a new record, it would make such a huge difference because so many people get to hear it. But in my case, nah, it's not.
But I do think somewhat of a tastemaker, though. I mean, you've definitely...
I honestly, Justin, I don't really think so. You know?
So humble.
I think I'd have to do an apprenticeship to even qualify as a cult figure. I said cult. I don't think so. I mean... some people like the radio show I do, but it wouldn't be in the hundreds of thousands or anything like that. It wouldn't be in the thousands. It mightn't even be in the hundreds. I don't know.
But when one of the bigger bands contacts you and says, tell me what you think, presumably they're sending you box sets or they're inviting you to shows, and it's their publicist. It's not them directly.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. So say in the case of classic rock, like the last couple of things I did, today I wrote a review of the new Pretenders album, which is out in September.
What did you think of it?
I really liked it. And I really like her. I thought the Pretenders walked away with Glastonbury. I don't know if anybody saw any of the footage, but I thought they completely... And they had Johnny Marr and Dave Grohl and even Paul McCartney at the side of the stage going, thumbing up like his life depended on it. But they didn't need any of those guys because they had Chrissie Hynde's voice and they had those great songs. And a brilliant, a really fantastic band.
The guitar player is great, isn't he?
Yeah. Awesome. I've forgotten his name, but I did write it down a couple of times today. But he is great. But he would have to be. She's always said that having great guitar players in her band is a point of pride for her. And anybody who has to try and follow James Honeyman Scott, you know the guy who was on the first two Pretenders albums? You know, he was fantastic. Died so young. But what else did I do? I did Aerosmith have a greatest hits coming out, which is the super duper 4LP set.
Wow.
Yeah, so
some of those errors,
so they're very
old,
big acts, you know.
Yeah,
so it doesn't matter to them. It doesn't matter to them. I mean, maybe, you know, I don't know the reach of classic rock, but, you know, maybe the publicists seem enthusiastic enough, so maybe, you know, obviously it means something to somebody.
But, I mean, what would happen then if Aerosmith did, like, the four-disc mega hits collection, sent it to you, Pat Carty, and then you slagged it off? Would you never hear from that publicist again, or would they not care?
No, I've given bad reviews to things. That's just part of. I mean, I don't think when someone let's take an Aerosmith as an example. Yeah. Now you know how much I love Aerosmith.
Yeah,
and always have. And I wrote the review I wrote. The editor came back and he said, there's some extra space. That's pretty good. Can you double the size of that?" And which is unusual. It's normally the other way around.
Yeah,
and. So with someone like Aerosmith, it doesn't really matter. But if that was a new band, and if I was writing in a magazine like Classic Rock, again, that has a bigger reach than maybe what I'm used to, maybe it would make a difference. I don't know. Because I used to listen. When I used to read magazines all the time, I would buy albums on the strength of reviews. If there was journalists that I knew, you know, not that I knew them personally, but that I'd got used to their reviews and said, this person knows what they're talking about. And that's happened. Alan, what's his name, in Uncut magazine, they used to do a lead review, and I'd often buy those albums without hearing a note of them. Yeah. So I don't know if it still has that effect, but that's the effect
it used to
have.
Yeah, there used to be... there was a journalist that wrote for Les Inrecoptibles, the French one, who did a book of essential albums, and there was stuff like the first Ron Sexsmith album and stuff like that on there. And a lot of things that I used that to sort of make my buying decisions for me, you know, and it was always right. There are certain people you come to rely on, I suppose, but I also think that when there's two styles of journalism.
I'm not saying I'm one of those people, by the way.
I think you are, actually.
I wouldn't think so. But.
No, but I mean, I feel like there's two styles of journalism as well. There's one where you know the writer puts a lot of themselves into it, and then you get like the emotions and all that sort of stuff, and then you can sort of, you're relating more to the writer than the songs. And then there's people who really, you know, use not even theory terms, but just describe the music as closely as possible. That's enough for me. Sometimes it feels like, oh, I think I know what they're on about, and that sounds like something I should avoid, or, you know.
Yeah. I think I try and do a bit of both of those. I have done stuff for, I remember I went to review ZZ Top playing live one night, and there was a whole bit in the middle about someone complimenting my dancing. He looks like a young Nureyev. And someone commented underneath it on social media or whatever. Yeah, good review, but someone should remind that idiot that it's supposed to be about ZZ Top, not about him. And that's a criticism that I've got a few times. I I've written pieces about the darkness. I went on the road with you guys, and there really was probably as much about me in that as there was about you.
Well, also, there was a time, because we're doing the 20th anniversary special edition of the album, and you wrote the stuff for that. And I remember you sent me a draft of it, and I wrote back to you and said, well, this is great, but I want to see more Pat. You know? Because there's a reason why we chose you. It's like the way you react to stuff, and the way you're kind of, you just surrender to the emotions that the music makes you feel. And it's fucking exciting to read the stuff that you come out with. Whether it's us or anybody, I enjoy a lot of what you write, even if I don't agree with the music that you enjoy listening to.
Do you remember the one about Kris Kristofferson?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, that was moving.
Kris Kristofferson played in Dublin, and I went to see it, and he was playing a song that I hadn't heard before, and I didn't know what it was. He came out and he said something like, this is for my kids. That's all he said. And he launched into this song. And I was sitting there on my own in the Olympia Theatre here in Dublin, and I didn't realise till about halfway through I was crying. Because it was just lyrics about his children, and I have two children, and and they're growing older, and he was saying stuff about, look, no matter where you go, I love you, it doesn't matter, that kind of thing. And you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And so that, I knew when that was happening, and when I went home afterwards, and all the reviews got to be around that moment.
Yeah.
Because that was the emotional connection of the music to me. Mm-hmm. And some people would say...
Also, you were so drunk, that's probably the only bit you remember.
Well, you see, that's the thing. I didn't have a drink at all that night.
Oh, really?
Not one.
Is that why you were crying? Because of the prices? Or?
That might be it, yeah. But I mean, to be serious, though. I knew that it had to center around that. And I had to have three or four goes at it to get it what I thought was right anyway. But some reviews you'll read don't have that emotional thing in them.
Yeah.
And they're almost like, and maybe some people like this, I don't, but they're almost like lists. Well, they played this and then they played that and then they played the other. They graced the stage and they took it by storm and all the cliches and all that stuff. And I don't really care for that. So I I'm not saying that there's anything special about me, but I'm the one who was there. And so I'm trying to report back to people who weren't there. So my job is to really tell you what it felt like.
Yeah.
What did it feel like? You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, we all know that Kris Kristofferson's going to play Help Me Make It Through the Night. We all know when we go see The Darkness, there's a good chance they're going to play I Believe in a Thing Called Love. You don't really need to tell people that. You know? Mm. Obviously, you'll mention it. But what happened? How did it... You know, what was the fun of it? You know?
Yeah.
What make the person sitting at home think, shit, I should have gone to that. That's the idea.
Or not. I mean,
Or not.
Maybe make the person at home experience the joy of missing out, which can be just as much fun to read sometimes, you know.
Yeah, sometimes you were sitting home going, I was gonna pay a few quid for that.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder, will I get sent to Coldplay are playing four nights here next? I think it's four nights in Crow Park here in Dublin, which is the stadium.
Could you almost write that review already?
Well, I'll be honest with you. We've talked about Coldplay before. Mm. I think the first couple of Coldplay albums are okay.
Yeah.
I think when they started becoming more
electronic,
the guitar started disappearing a bit, I lost interest very quickly. Not that there's anything wrong with electronic music, but when they started having people like Rihanna on the records and things like that, it didn't really do it for me. Now, the reason I'm bringing it up is that there was all sorts of clamour for tickets. Four nights in Crow Park, so there must be 60, 70, 80,000 people a night.
Wow.
In this place. Or maybe, 60,000 anyway. And but some of the VIP packages were reported as being over €900 a seat.
Okay. What do you get for that, though? Does it say?
Well, I'm sure you get a very good seat, don't get me wrong. And I certainly don't want to fall out with any of the promoters, who are all lovely people.
It's great value, in addition to the terrific show that you get to watch, it's also, a photo with the band or something like that? What's the vibe?
Well, there isn't a photo with the band.
Well, it's just £900 for a ticket.
No, it said down the bottom, band not involved, or there was some caveat down the bottom, band not involved. So you get a few lanyards and you get souvenir things. But that seems bizarre. And that was in around the same week as Sinead O'Connor passed away, right? Okay. So, as you know, you very kindly were passing on a radio spot I did about that. And I did see a difference between that she was a kind of an artist that was in it for the art, I think, and in it to say what she wanted to say, and she had something to say.
Well, her whole vibe was true activism, whereas I think sometimes you see like the huge bands that have such, they have really vague kind of things that they get, like, campaigning to stop people from dropping bombs on each other, and it's something super vague and like... everybody hurts level kind of banal.
Let's all be nice to each other. Yeah, okay, that's a great idea.
For once, let's all be nice to each other. Yeah.
But she
was very specific about what she was...
Well, she sacrificed her whole career in America to say what she wanted to say. Yeah. You know, she was a number one star and she threw that away. And she knew what she was doing when she did it. But she had to say what she wanted to say. And then you put that up against someone charging you that much money for a seat at a concert. And you go, is that really what rock and roll is supposed to be about? Is that really it? And I'm not convinced. So, but something like Coldplay, going to review that. I'm not saying I would be, and I probably won't be now anyway. That's for sure.
But I think you already have. Yeah.
Well, you have to go in. I mean, even though, as we said, we mightn't care for the last few Coldplay records, you have to go in and go, well, what happened at that? Once you got inside, what happened that night? You can't.
Then how wide is the context to an article like that then? Because if you go in there and, you could, if you very, leave the parameters, what happened, how you felt between the beginning and the end, and that's the only context you're allowed. But I think if I sent Pat Carty to a Coldplay gig to do a review of it, I'd want that contextualised by Sinead O'Connor.
Oh, well, it would be. You would get that from me. Yeah, you would.
And for better or worse.
And probably some people would go, yeah, we didn't want that, Pat.
Yeah, we didn't ask her to write about Sinead O'Connor. We were supposed to be talking about...
Can't you just keep your opinions to yourself for 5 minutes? No.
It's literally your job to not keep your opinion to yourself. It's literally your job.
As I say, I'll probably talk myself out of doing it now, so...
Yeah,
I wouldn't worry about it.
I think you'd write a really interesting...
As I say, I'm not totally anti Coldplay. I think Coldplay has some good songs.
But do you go into a gig, having to sort of wipe your memory of all the Sinead O'Connor,
No, because anyone else going into the gig doesn't do that. So anyone else who's at the gig, so if there's 60,000 people and I'm one of them, then everybody else is bringing in that baggage as well and thinking, and especially the people who paid £900 for a ticket. They're thinking, because, how could you not be disappointed if you paid £900 for a ticket?
I think if you have the sort of money that makes that a doable thing, you don't give a fuck about anything, least of all music. You're probably a hedge fund manager.
Well, what about then, because Taylor Swift tickets went on sale not long before that here for... I think they're two shows, two big outdoor shows as well. And so they have this thing now, you know, it used to be a thing, like, say, when the Darkness Olympia tickets went on sale, they went on sale at 9 o'clock on a Friday morning.
Yeah.
And everybody logged on, and good luck to you. And hopefully you get some tickets. Yeah. And by the way, kudos for shifting a lot of tickets there recently, Justin. Yeah, anyway.
Thank you. yeah, miracles.
But, say, in her case, because there's such a demand, you had to, first of all, apply to be put on the waiting list to be allowed to queue for the tickets in the first place. And what would happen then is, I don't know if it's dynamic pricing. I don't know if that's the case. But some people were, a lot of people are going on and buying tickets for their kids. So they're queuing up and then they get through. And the only tickets they can get are 400 quid each or something like that, or 300. I don't know exactly how much. But first of all, you'd have to say to yourself, right, well, I have to go, and my daughter, will say, for example, has to go. So that's 800 quid before I leave the house. Okay? So I'm going to have to be sensible here and say to my daughter, look, that's not doable. And then you're the worst guy in the world. And so, I don't know, there's something a bit off there. I think I'm not knocking people. If you were in a position, like, we'll say the Darkness, the next Darkness album, which I'm sure will be a masterpiece, does Thriller numbers, right? Has seven okay. number one singles yeah, on it. Yeah. Okay. And you become, you're right. As Joe Cocker would say, you're right up there where you belong, right? you're playing, you have to play 10 nights in Wembley just to satisfy half the demand or something like yeah. that. Right. Now, what would you say if I rang you up and said, oh, yeah, I see you've got that dynamic pricing, so people trying to get tickets end up being offered tickets for 400 or 500 quid. What would you say then, as the artist? Because I'm sure Taylor Swift and Coldplay are getting some of that money.
Oh, yeah, I expect they would be. But, I mean, the thing is, we could do some crude maths here. Hang on. So
I shouldn't be saying any of this.
No, watch this. I'll do some maths for you. Okay.
So I want these promoters to let me into this.
So we're
shows.
Talking about, like, I think Taylor Swift's touring is probably estimated to net $1 billion.
And listen, that's market demands, and I'm not saying Taylor Swift isn't a very great artist. I happen to like a lot of her songs. Any that I've heard, I'm no expert, but
I think this we're not. You know,
you're not questioning her artistic
definitely
validity.
Okay. Yes, the artistic merits are self-evident. She's obviously where she belongs, and it's all good, all great. But you're asking if the Darkness is suddenly in the Taylor Swift position, how would I feel about people being charged that sort of money to bring their folks to?
I wouldn't care. I'd be in Thailand with a carrot up my arse.
Yeah, but you don't care either, because you'll be sitting next to me.
Right, damn right I will.
I feel like we love touring. It's like, it's our thing. We enjoy it, and we scarcely make a profit. Sometimes we go and do a tour and we need to sell a lot of t-shirts for it to become profitable. Sometimes we have to do VIP stuff or else we're losing money. You know, it's like that for the Darkness. So I don't know if we'd ever fall into that trap of charging people astronomical amounts just to sit in front of us while we play the hits that they've already paid us to listen to. You know, I don't think we'd do that. And I think that's, it might be a rock and roll thing. It might be just because we're more rock and roll. It might be that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's because if you're playing 10 Wembleys, you don't fucking need to charge $400. If you charge, say, 35, well, I think that's a reasonable.
There's that as well. You know? I mean, I went to see Bruce Springsteen five times this summer on the tour he's currently on. I went three times in Dublin, and I went to Rome, and I went to Munich.
It's weird because you've never liked his music.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and
it's too blue collar for you.
Well, the ones in Dublin, to be fair, one I got in as a press person. So I did review the three of them for three different publications, but I got in. I got complimentary tickets for the first night, but I did buy the tickets for the second and third night, and we bought the tickets for Rome Munich. And they were pricey, as in 100 and something, which is not good, which is expensive, but it's a long way away from 900.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
You know? And with good tickets, I mean, we were down in the pits.
Do you know what the cheapest ones were?
I wouldn't say you got any change out of 100 euros. In fact, I'd say you had to put your hand in your pocket again. I'd say, I don't know that for a fact. I know how much I paid, and you know, but
But you didn't get but the cheapest ones.
But there's another, well, there's another thing there. I mean, he plays for 3 hours. And but I happen to adore his music. So if you're in the same position for Coldplay or Taylor Swift, I'm not knocking people for going to this, but it's just when you're going in looking for tickets and suddenly all that's left is a ticket that's trying to charge you £400 or £500. That seems a bit, that seems a bit much to me.
I mean, but the problem is every kid in Ireland probably wants to go to it.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. Well, that's market forces, isn't it?
Do more shows, I mean, maybe?
Yeah, well, I mean, I know that the Darkness had to quickly announce more shows on their UK tour. Because,
yeah, we didn't announce more expensive tickets. You know, even
yeah, sure you didn't.
not at first, anyway. We sort of slid that information in underneath the. You
know. Yeah. No, it's just. What's my point here? I don't know what my point is.
I think your point. I think you touched on it earlier. I think is the spirit of rock and roll. Can it exist in a world where it costs £900 to go and see a show?
Listen, you know, and I know that it's show business. It's show, and there's a business in that as well. And but there is a kind of a smell of grabbing your most devoted fans and squeezing for everything you can get. You know, that's what it seems like to me.
Well, maybe it's the other way around though, because the most devoted fans would be the ones right at the beginning of the, you know, when the ticket sales start, they'll be there trying to get the cheap ones, and then it's the last few.
Right, but hold on a second.
But that's how
that's changed. I mean, we can all, if the tickets go on sale at 9 o'clock on a Friday morning, we can all be sitting at a computer at 7:30 in the morning, tap tap tapping away. Remember the old days when people used to have to queue up overnight outside HMV to get now, and then you knew who the if it was lashing rain, you knew who the dedicated people were then. Whereas now, and then this thing of having, well, you can't even do that anymore. You have to apply to be allowed to join the queue. And then you click on something and it says, yes, you're in the queue, you're number 50,000. Or something. Like, what the fuck? Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know. There's something a bit off about it. Now,
well,
again,
do you think that that's like the technology around music transitioning into something, and then this could just be a bumpy patch where we don't really know how to do it. You know.
Well, I suppose there's another. I mean, you know better than I do.
Because sometimes it's like it's difficult to resist the temptation to think of them as mercenaries. You know, ringing out their. As much as they can from people who just like their music on a spiritual level and will work really, really hard to demonstrate that.
Well, I mean, you know better than I do that a band, say, at the Darkness level, we'll say, has to work a lot harder than they had to 20 years ago because of record sales going through the floor and Spotify paying, you know, if I click on, I believe in a thing called love, and you get 0.00007 of a cent or something like that. That's not a great return.
Not really, but you probably did click on it by accident, in fairness.
I did. I was looking for Dancing Queen, and I clicked on it. Anyway, you could say the touring tickets had to get more expensive, insurance is more expensive, travel's more expensive, all that stuff.
Yep.
I'm aware of that. And so, like, when you come into town, you charge about, I don't know how much your tickets are because I never have to pay for them. Thank you. 40 or 50 quid, maybe. I don't know if they're even that. They're probably less.
They're not.
You know,
expensive.
And you think, yeah, that's still an expensive night out. You know, when you add in having to get if people of our age have to get a babysitter, they have to travel wherever they're going to, all that. So if you multiply that by several hundred, it's a bit much.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean,
it is a bit much.
I mean,
and now, listen, I want to say again, I am in no way having a go at any local promoters in Ireland who I love and adore, and everybody who works for
these
them.
These are the best guys.
Oh, they're beautiful people, and don't lose my phone number after me giving
we'll
out for 10
minutes.
Put
the phone number in the description here, in case you lost it.
Probably just talk me way out of a job there, but anyway.
No, of course you haven't. I know, these are important points, really. I mean, when we used to go and tour the world, I always noticed that the tickets seemed really expensive in Australia, but obviously that makes sense. You've got to ship your equipment there, and you've got to pay, you know, do the visa application process and all the other stuff that you have to do. Travel, accommodation, everything is expensive, and that's reflected in the ticket price because we've got an audience that's a certain size, and we have to make the show, you know, make money, at least makes make $1. If we can make $1, then we're happy.
Make enough to do the next show. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. I mean, like, even traveling to people coming into Ireland now, there has been the odd act that have just gone, no, it's too expensive. Mm. Like Beyonce's tour, which was printed money, didn't do a show here, which was unusual. You know, they did UK shows, but they didn't come over there.
Pretty sure she could charge enough to make it a profitable show. I mean,
I'm sure she could. I don't know. Maybe there wasn't a suitable venue. I don't know. Available at the time. Hmm. I mean, let's not even get into like a band traveling from the UK now because of the restrictions that they voted for and brought in the UK. I was talking to someone last week. No, maybe I was tweeting about it. Someone was trying to send me a promo record. Of an Elvis Costello and Burt Bacharach thing that, and I'd they said, "Oh, listen, this has been put out again. Would you like to review it?" And I said, "Yeah." And then I said, "Look, I'd really like to get a copy of that for myself rather than just a stream." And they said, "No, we'll send you one, Pat." So I reviewed the record in March, and then they sent it from London. First time it got lost. Second time it was returned by the customs here, who were only doing their job because the customs declaration wasn't filled out properly or something like that. And the third time it came through. And I got it last week and I reviewed the album in March. That's how long it took to get from London. In the old days, that would have taken 2 days.
Yeah, it's difficult to do anything in Europe at the moment for bands that are originally from the UK.
But I mean, wait, we just give it out. This is
weird. That, listen, you know.
How long are we into this? This isn't very funny. This is just two old guys giving out.
You're right. Yeah. Let's have a look here. So I've got another question.
Right.
Briefly, just a brief one, okay? What is the role of music journalism? Go.
Right. Well, it used to be, first of all, as you say, a tastemaker kind of thing. Before, I suppose, it changed because when the internet made everything available at a click. So if an album is released, if you release an album tomorrow, then do you really need me telling you what I think about it? Because you can just click and have a listen yourself. So it has changed a bit. Mm. I mean, as I say, when I was a younger man, you would be looking out for certain journalists. And before the record would come out, they'd have it. And they'd say, well, this new record from U2 or whatever it is, they've done this and they've done that. And you get excited about it. Mm-hmm. Or you wouldn't. But, you know, if they were saying good things, you get excited about it. And then it'd be out the next Friday and you'd be going, right, well, I have to get a copy of that. So what is their role now? I don't know. Because bands
have a good question.
I'm serious.
Well, I sometimes wonder if, like, journalism and, you know, doing magazines in the first place is, you know, is suffered in the same way that music has, really, because nobody buys magazines anymore.
Very much so, yeah. I'm not privy to sales figures, but yeah, very much so. People just don't. My children, for example, I have a 20-year-old and a 17-year-old. It wouldn't occur to them to buy a magazine.
Mm.
Even ones that their father's.
What would they think of one if you gave them a magazine? Would they even recognise it as a format? I'm wondering what my child would think. She's 10.
My daughter is 17. She bought a Formula One magazine, which I thought was a bit strange.
It's a bit strange. Was she hiding something else in there?
I don't know what she was hoping for as a Christmas present, but she's going to be disappointed. music magazines, no, because, I mean, bands and acts now have a direct connection to their fans. You know, social media, direct connection. So I suppose what music journalism then needs to be, it goes back to what we're saying, it needs to be opinionated. Mm. It needs to, you know, there's no place at all for lists. It needs to be someone giving their opinion. Yeah. And if they're any good, maybe some readers will go, hey, I like that person. I'd like to hear what they say about this. That's what you're hoping for, maybe. That's the only point of it. Ed Sheeran said recently, I think, he came out and he said, what's the point? I don't want to be reviewed. What's the point? Fans can just click on the stuff. Obviously, I don't agree with that.
I don't think I agree with that either.
I go on the radio. I appear on Arena and RT1 now and again reviewing albums. Mm. And I go out of my way there.
To slag off stuff.
No, not necessarily. But I go out of my way. I'm conscious that people are listening. Mm. So nobody wants a list. They want to be entertained. So
I think the internet itself is just a one long list. That's what it is, you know. Cause we all know what happened. It's there. But yeah, I mean, I think people need to be told what's good sometimes. I think that's actually...
That's the idea about curation, you know, like they have festivals that are curated by somebody or a playlist curated by somebody. So if it's someone, like say if you did one, I'd be... Like I was at a a disco that where you were the DJ.
I curated some serious
New Year's Eve
bangers that night. I remember.
And if you remember where I was in the room, I was down the back doing a lot of drinking.
Yeah.
But every so often, I just get up and go, "Yeah, that's good."
Yeah. And I'd be looking for it as well. It's like that's the only validation I need. I had a full floor throughout the evening, but I just wanted to see that fun.
And then people saying, "Are you going to get up and dance?" "No, I'm a bit busy, but I'll maybe later on." But that was so maybe curation. That's what you're talking about.
You shouldn't do it for free anyway. Well, that's obvious, you know.
Well, if you trust, if you get to trust people. So if someone comes along, like if you're a Cure fan, we'll say, and Robert Smith goes on somewhere and says, "Well, here are 20 records I've been listening to this year." Mm. You're going to be very interested in that.
Yeah, probably.
You know, so it's maybe it's a slightly similar thing on a much lower level. You go, I trust this person. Like there are several journalists that I read regularly, and I trust what they say.
So in fact, the role of a journalist then is to be a personality and to curate some sort of taste board that people can buy into, or?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've had some people, not very many, send me messages saying, "Oh, I heard such and such that you played on the radio, and I'd never heard that before, and I like that." Or someone going, "What was that fifth song that you played?" Or something like that.
And you go, that was "I Believe in a Thing Called Love" by the Darkness.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, that's right. No, the power. Never mind. I go for "The Power and the Glory of Love" by the Darkness.
That is
what a track.
That is why I trust you to curate.
Yeah, but I think that's to answer your question. Sorry, to get back to the questions. I would hope that's what I do. I don't know if it is, but that's what I try and do. And obviously, even in a market as small as Ireland, there are other journalists who have a much, much wider reach than I do. But that's what I try and do. So even if there's only, two men and a dog listening, that's what I'm doing anyway.
Yeah.
You know? Because I just like doing it.
Do you ever feel like when you see stuff that's huge, and then this is our opportunity to both be old men looking up at the sky, shouting at stuff?
Right.
Because, and I talked about this in another episode, but I saw a video of a prominent artist, one whose name I'd heard, and I didn't really know what kind of music they did. I saw it, and there was they were declaring a guest appearance from a very, very famous person who's very, very sort of infamously lost the plot a bit. I'm not going to say any more than that.
Okay? Hold on, I got to think about this now for a minute. Infamously lost the plot a bit.
Yeah. And perhaps seems to be back on track. But anyway, this newer artist.
Yeah.
Was introducing the aforementioned plot loser. and was going, "Without this guy, there is no this guy." You know,
what kind of level of plot loser are we talking about? Are we talking about, do you want to be in my gang? Or are we talking about a bit further down the scale? Or?
No, a bit broader and conceptual, a bit more conceptual than the gang wanting to be in. It was more like, how can I say this?
You mean artistically gone off into the hedges?
No, I don't mean that either. That happened a long time ago. But I'm talking about perhaps walking a bit more purposefully.
Yeah, no, you lost me there.
Like,
go on, keep going.
Okay, so sympathizing with
people on one side of the road rather than on the other side.
Correct.
Of the road.
Correct. And
would this person be from the possibly from the northern area of England?
No, actually. Who are you talking about?
I got the wrong guy, sorry.
No, it's an artist, the established artist. Who cares? It doesn't matter. But anyway, the point I was making...
I care. I want to know who it is.
I'll tell you afterwards. Yeah. But maybe I'll send you the video, actually. But I was gobsmacked to see these two individuals standing upon a stage.
Hold on, we should get people involved here. If you think you can guess who it is, maybe you should put it in the comments down below.
Yeah, have a little guess.
And by the way, while you're down there, please remember to click on that like button and the subscribe button.
You're so good at this.
Justin Hawkins Rides Again. It's out every whatever day of the week.
Yeah, but we're also doing this as an audio podcast as well, so.
Oh my God.
It's incredible.
Why would anybody want to put themselves through this?
Because we're geniuses.
Yeah, okay, go on.
Anyway, speaking of geniuses.
Anyway, this person,
geniuses. So, established artist makes guest appearance at emerging or, you know, less established art, a new thing that's big. And it was just two individuals standing on a stage shouting at a stadium full of fucking idiots. And I'm like, I'm serious. Like, it wasn't even, like, there's nothing rhythmic or musical about it. It was just shouting.
This is old man shit.
I know it is, but it's fucking true. Yeah, I'm going to show you the video and you're going to look at it and go, what the fuck is that? That is shit. You know, because you and I, we love all kinds of music. It's just got to be fucking good. It's just got to be good. That's all it's got to be.
Duke Ellington once said, there's only two types of music, the good stuff and the bad stuff.
Yeah.
There you go. But it's good enough for Duke Ellington.
But I feel like, you know, like, what are the standards? I mean, who is telling these people that that stuff's fucking acceptable? It just isn't. It's shit.
Yeah, but I tell you what, one thing I do like about, and it's one of the few things I like about the Justin Hawkins Rides Again corporation that's been established now, you know. When I watch your videos, and I'll be honest, it's not all the time, because we can't discuss that time I got fired and all that. But when I watch them, I do like the way that you. First of all, I should say this as well. I have had people since you started doing these, and your reach has expanded. I have had people come up and say, "Hey, I saw one of your mate's videos." Because you're known in Ireland as Pat Carty's mate, of course. Yeah. And
that's how I identify as well. So.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. And hey, it's 2023. Anyway, people have said to me, hey, I saw one of your mate's videos, you know, where he was analysing the stuff. And then the surprised look comes on their face. Yeah. He's really intelligent, isn't he? I go, I knew that, yeah. They assume you're an idiot, first of all.
And most also, people do, I think.
What I like about it is I've heard stuff that I hadn't heard before while you playing. The one that sticks out is you did a 1975 song, a band I didn't know an awful lot about. Mm-hmm. I presumed incorrectly because I'm an old man. I presumed they weren't for me.
Mm-hmm. But they
are. Played some song. Yeah, you played some song. I don't know. I still don't know much about them, but I really liked the song you did. Mm-hmm. I did like. When we talk about protests, it's not on Sinead O'Connor level, but you saw what your man did from the 1975 in Malaysia, was it?
It was Malaysia.
There recently. Yeah, I admired that. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty cool.
Did you? That's interesting because there's been a lot. I mean, I did a whole episode about that because...
Well, why shouldn't you stand up for what you believe in?
Well, absolutely, but is there...
Even if I don't agree with what you believe in, although I do in that instance, I still think people should stand up for what they believe in.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that we all... You and I probably agree, right, that what he's saying in essence was the right thing.
Yeah.
But I think the questions that were raised is like, did he do it in the right way? Is using, I mean, obviously we think that using your platform as an entertainer or an artist or whatever you happen to be, that's fair enough because, you know, at the end of the day, you're a person as well, aren't you? And like your passions and stuff are informed by the opinions that you have and all that. And it's like... A lot of people were upset because it's going to make the situation worse, at least in the short term. I mean, there'll be promoters very reluctant to put a gig on now. You know, no one's going to put a gig on in Malaysia. That's
well, that's probably true. Possibly true. I did see somewhere today, I think I saw today, that the organisers of the festival in question are suing the 1975 for money lost.
That's not that surprising, and then though.
That swings back into the thing we're talking about. Because it's a business as well. Mm. But then, as an artist then, let me ask you, if you were in a similar situation where someone had said to you, listen, we're going to pay you this much money to headline this festival.
Yeah.
And we're delighted to have you. But just before you go on, whatever you do, you know, don't mention your arse. Don't do this, you know?
You know what effect that would have.
Well, it's a good example, you know? Yeah. Whatever you do, listen, we have a certain kind of audience here. So, you know the way sometimes you tend to touch your own arse on stage?
I do.
And you would go, yeah, that's half the show.
Yeah.
And they would say to you, well, Justin, we're paying you this amount of money, so tonight, don't do that. What would you do in that instance? Would you say?
I think I would have Softy build something out of gaffer tape that prevents me from being able to reach back there.
Are you talking about some sort of some sort of polyester tutu arrangement that incorporating a chastity belt
with some rigid wiring around it, and maybe electrified as well. So even if I go for the arse, it's and then I.
Look, I know that. You know that that very talented lady who designs your costumes,
Angela Bright.
There you go. Can she design some sort of barbed wire hot pants?
I'll get her straight on that, because we've got shows coming up in which country is it where I'm not allowed to touch my ass?
I don't know. I don't know which country this is. But,
where are we talking
if you
about?
Would like a, I believe in a thing called love. And then I think that's part of the act there, where you just grab the two cheeks of your ass and then you come. But then what you can do is you can incorporate something else into this. Your hands would come away and then suddenly you have stigmata. So you get a bit of, a Jesus action going as well.
Yeah, because that's not going to offend anybody. That's...
You see, now this is more like the old show.
Yeah.
What you have to do is you have to edit out all the complaining from the start and start bit. But I mean, no, sorry, the question still stands. So if someone said, okay, well, maybe that's not a good example about arse, but okay, say...
Well, let's do a serious one.
You can't swear. You can't swear, you know, so you can't do get your hands off my woman. Yeah, okay. You have to edit out all the swear words and that. You have to say, like, one of my favourite Darkness songs is, you know, Solid Gold.
Yeah.
Take the fellatio bit out of that and take the shit out of that and take that... what would you do with that?
Well, that would be an instrumental.
It would, yeah. Well, you know that the old story about the Rolling Stones go on the Ed Sullivan show in the 60s. Well, the Stones were still coming up. So they were supposed to do Let's Spend the Night Together.
Oh, yeah. Right? I remember this story,
And this being, Let's Spend the Night Together. So whatever year it was, 65, 66, they were told, no, don't say that. Can you change it to Let's Spend Some Time Together?
Oh, yeah.
Now, the Stones did that. Their clip is there, the Stones. And you can see Jagger going, let's spend some time together. And his eyes go up every time he does it. Yeah. But he still did it.
Yeah.
Although it was a different time, let's be fair. And that would have helped to break them in America. So I can understand why he would do it. But in a similar situation, what would you do?
Let's spend some time together. There's no question about it. Because that's mild. I mean, I think the 75s thing is talking about punitive laws. Against homosexuality. That's a totally different thing. I mean, I feel like in America, we always used to play the game a little bit as well. Like the first record, we had to do a clean version of it because half of those songs are covered in swearing, you know, and we have to change.
Which is
it.
On the clean version, should I tell people, is on the 20th anniversary Permission to Land box set.
Is it?
Can probably order that in the link somewhere down here.
I reckon there'll be a link to it,
And you should, if only for the brilliant... probably Grammy win an essay that's inside in it by yours truly. Yeah. That's the best bit.
That is the bit that's going to win the Grammy. That's
go ahead, Justin.
There's no way we'll be in contention for anything like that were it not for your words. No, I mean,
Would you be able to put then, if I win the Grammy, right? Mm. If I win the Grammy, would you then put a sticker on the outside saying Grammy win an
Grammy award
and
winning.
Then in small writing?
The category would be so small you need a microscope to see that. But we have the technology. The printers they use nowadays are just brilliant. So don't worry, all the information will be on there.
Yeah. I hope they spelt my name right. That's all.
Don't worry, I did it for them. It's okay. I don't know. When it's something important like that.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about this 1975 one was that I think they booked the gig. And then found out the day before what the punitive laws against homosexuality are.
Okay, well, no.
So they should have done some homework.
That bit I question.
Yeah.
Because surely, I've never been in Malaysia, and I knew that.
Right.
So if I was in the 1975 and I'd already signed contracts and everything, maybe they should have known that beforehand. So I'm not saying that's the case, but you're telling me that's the case. I don't know.
Well, that's what he said on stage. He said if you found out, you realised that was the case yesterday or the day before, the concert.
But it's it's a different version of people playing in Israel, people playing
South Africa.
like the old days, Sun City, and things like that. Yeah. Should you, claim it afterwards? I'm just doing a gig.
No, because I mean, in the Sun City example, most of the. Most of the touring acts had boycotted that, and they'd done it in a really sort of big public way. So if you elected to sort of go and play there, if you elected to go and play there during apartheid, you were doing that as a sort of picket scab almost. You know, you were kind of like you were breaking from the pack of solidarity, and you were cashing in regardless. And that's
I've nothing against getting paid. I'm very
getting
fond
paid
of
is it. Important. It's an important part of this. You know, it's an aspirational.
I don't know.
Thing,
it's a big question. But again, sorry to go back to. So would it be Would your response be proportionate to the size of the fee? Whether you would go, let's spend some time together.
No, I think in the, because that one's more of a promo thing where they're just asking you to tone it down. Just to get your face on television in America in the 60s. I mean, I would just I would go, let's spend some time. I wouldn't even do the eyes. Yeah, I'd be I'd be selling it like it's the original. That's what I'd be doing.
You'd be doing, let's spend some time together, and then forget about the barbed wire pants. They cut your hands, blood everywhere.
Yeah.
Ed Sullivan comes on at the end. There's a really good share. And off you go.
That's it. Yeah, straight into accident and emergency.
I mean, okay, but at a festival, we'll say, someone said to you, right, Justin, listen, take out all the swear words tonight.
Yeah.
We paid you whatever amount. I have no idea what a headline and act gets, but whatever it is, I'm sure it's good money. So they said, look, we've paid you this. They come to you an hour before the show and say, everything's great. We got you all that stuff. We have the big white tiger out the front that you asked for, all that kind of gear. Yeah, we've all as many non-alcoholic drinks here as you can possibly stick into yourself.
Four or five, I reckon.
Yeah, there's some rice bowls and some avocados. I love those. Here. Everything's beautiful.
That's
right?
Brilliant. Yeah, I'm very happy with the backstage arrangements. Thanks for sorting
good.
All that
it's
out.
Good, it's good. Yeah, it's good. And then, but then someone says to you, "Right, but you have to take all that swearing out because we don't want to offend the boss. The owner's mother is here, and she doesn't like
that's
that."
A great, great reason. I'd be. How would I do it? I'd just do the version of those songs that may have appeared in on an edition that was sold in Walmart. I'd do it because I mean, I don't have a pathological,
But what about if there was a load of, right, okay, say you do that, but then the first five rows are full of Serious Darkness fans and they're looking at you going, what the fuck is this? What's this? They would say, what the fudge is this? Mother fudger, what are you doing?
I'd be like, well, I'm just doing my fudging job. Maybe I would do the thing with the Freddie Starr where I'd be singing and it's like cutting out, and so like on the swear words.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's good.
And then it'd be like, then I'm clear on both fronts, really.
Yeah.
Try that, maybe.
It's a tricky question. Okay, well, say, put yourself in the position of the 1975 then. You're hired to play a gig in Malaysia.
Yeah.
You didn't know about it, we'll say. Mm-hmm. And if that's what Matt Healy says, I've no reason to disbelieve him. That's his name, isn't it? Matt Healy.
Yeah. Anyway, Matt Healy. Yeah.
I've no reason to disbelieve him. He seems like he knows what he's doing. So if that happened, what would you do in that situation?
So if I rocked up to a gig in Malaysia, knowing that I find that particular...
We should say
piece
at this
of legislation
point
is abhorrent to me and really, really offensive to me.
We should say at this point, anyone from Malaysia who's watching this, hey, you're lovely people and we're not saying anything about that. We're just talking about this situation.
Nobody thinks we're saying nasty things about Malaysian people. I'm sure of that. But I think to answer your question, if I went to... If the Darkness was booked for some fucking... Why would the Darkness be headlining a festival? But, say we are.
There was a mistake. Were someone else.
A clerical error has occurred, and somehow...
They thought it was a Pink Floyd tribute band. That there was
And
Dark Side of the Moon was spelt wrong or something. Yeah.
Okay, so the promoters come in and said to us, listen, there's been a terrible mix-up here. We need you to play at least three Pink Floyd songs because we've marketed you as the Darkness Side of the Moon.
The moon. That's what I meant.
Yeah. So I'd be like, okay, well, we'll do the Pink Floyd numbers. That's fine. Watch me for the changes, lads. I know this stuff back to front. Don't worry. Follow me. It's okay. We'll get that
everybody,
done.
Everybody falls asleep.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, yeah.
But I think if I found those laws abhorrent, and then I came on stage and I was like, oh, I should have boycotted this. At that point, I think it's too late. I think you've got to do the gig.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's
nothing wrong with saying that you're, using that platform in a different way. Like, you play the gig, but you also say, look, guys, I think it's crazy that in a field full of people who, at least, a percentage of you is going to be gay. I mean, it's crazy that's punishable in any respect. I'm really disappointed that your government has that stance. But here's solid gold. on a, but this
starts
but
like that as well.
This one's called this, and I frankly I think it's disgusting. This next song is called "Shine on You Crazy Diamond."
Yeah, of course. Sorry, I forgot where we were. Yeah, there for a minute. There's also an element. Don't forget that rebellion is cool.
Yeah.
So. It probably upped his standing in certain people's eyes. Oh, maybe
absolutely.
Mine.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been so much reaction to it, and a lot of it's been positive, and a lot of it's been really negative as well. It's just been such a, I mean, it's invited debate, but whether it's actioned any change is another question altogether.
Is there any such thing as bad publicity?
Woof. Why don't we ask that guy? What was that song? Do you want to be in my gang?
Yeah. Okay, well, that's an extreme, extreme version
just to,
of that.
But. Just to demonstrate that there is such a thing as bad publicity. But yeah. I think in rock and roll, it's harder to find. You've got to go there, really, before you...
Well, even something like that. I mean, when you think of rock and roll as it is now, right, as opposed to the rock and roll that maybe you and I grew up with, it is a lot more corporate and safe than it used to be. And everybody, and also social media plays into this. And, as I say, that's why I'm going to ask Jenny to cut out all my complaining about promoters earlier on. that people are worried about saying anything now. Mm. That everything has to be safe. And then everybody has to go and apologise the next day for saying anything at all.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas rock and roll in the old days used to be like...
Well, rock and roll, in its heart, it shouldn't be apologetic in any respect. It's like the whole... It's the whole thing. It's actually the whole thing when you think about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm contributing to an article that's coming up in a newspaper about the best... they asked several different critics to pick their favourite music book. And so I picked one called The True Adventures of the Rolling Stones by a fellow called Stanley Booth. And basically he went on tour with them in 69 and 70. He was there at Altamont, all that kind of stuff. And it's an incredible book. But it kind of captures this moment where rock and roll really was counterculture stuff. Mm. You know, it wasn't the corporate stuff. It was dangerous. It was vital. Mm. You know, I'm not saying that it's cool that someone got killed, but that kind of thing, that's what happened. And, you know, wild stuff happened. Mm. Whereas now it's seen more as a career. If we're Coldplay, let's have the, what do you call that thing that they had where they had the exercise bikes to try and help power the thing. And as you quoted me one time, what's the point in going on the road if you're Coldplay? Oh, you're worried about running over a hedgehog in the tour bus.
Yeah.
You know, so it has changed. So then for someone like Matt Healy to come along and go, this is wrong.
Yeah, but that's why I love Matt Healy. I think he's a proper rock star, and I think he's a trickster, and I think he's a guy that'll ask those questions. He'll have that attitude. He's got the courage to do stuff like that. But I do think that in this one particular instance, it was pretty clumsy. You know, it could have been handled differently.
Well,
and you're talking about people's lives. You know, that's actually
no. I understand. Yeah, you know. I would say if I didn't have these headphones on, Matt, I would take the hat that's making me look like the fat lad out of Curiosity Killer Cat off to you. I think to speak out, I think, is a good thing. Yeah, I think it's a good thing.
I think so too.
No, mind you, as you say, I don't live in Malaysia, so maybe it has made things worse.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, also, I just think there's, if you have like an objection to some legislation like that, you've got to find effective activism, talk to people who are on the ground in that area and see what can be done and how to use your platform more responsibly. Yeah. There's a way of doing it if it's true activism. If it's snotty rock and roll stuff, then fucking brilliant. He did exactly the right thing. But if you actually want to change stuff, I think you've got to think more carefully about how you do it.
Should rock and roll be separate from politics altogether?
That's another question.
There you go. Sorry, you're supposed to be asking the questions.
Yeah, sorry. Well,
what's going on?
You know, I was going to ask you that, but you're going through the list for me. I could ask you about your life. Shall I ask you about your... Yeah, let's do that. How did you get into music journalism?
Accidentally.
Accidentally on purpose, you mean?
Well, accidentally. What happened was I was 45, so I'm 51 now. So this is 2017. 2016, I think, was the year that a lot of people in music died. So you had Leonard Cohen and Prince and David Bowie and George Martin, I think, as well. And so I had, when these things happened, I'm a very big fan of all those people. It's quite affected. So just for my own purposes. I put up paragraphs of stuff on social media saying, oh, well, I remember this. And so I was telling a story about, say, David Bowie and going to see David Bowie. And David Bowie came here to play, and he played the Olympia, where you've played a few times, which was very, very small for David Bowie. This is in 1996, I think, or something like that. And again, this was before the internet really took off. So you had to go and buy the tickets. You had to queue up and buy the tickets. Now, I was living around the corner from the Olympia at the time, and I had told my girlfriend at the time, tickets are on sale Saturday morning or something like that. And she lived somewhere else. And she said, no, you go down and get two tickets. And I said, absolutely, no problem. I'll do that. So Friday night, what do? I go out and have a few pints, right? And then I slightly slept it out, woke up, ran to the Olympia. Not walked, ran.
I can't get to that.
Well, yeah. There's no footage of this, of course. Yeah. Got down to the box office. There's one ticket left, right?
Yeah.
So I took the hand off your one as well as the ticket. I said, yeah, give me the ticket. And then I had to ring said girlfriend and say, did you get the tickets? And I said, well, I got a ticket. And she says, you're not going to go, are you? And I said, of course I'm going to fucking go. It's David Bowie. And she says, well, if it was me, I wouldn't go. And, well, okay, well, you get your way. You're not going. I'm going.
So, and that was, I think we can file this section of the podcast under relationship management, according
yes,
to Pat.
Yes, relationship advice. And anyway, so he was brilliant. He was fantastic. It was worth it. It was worth the row.
Did
anyway,
you tell her
so
that?
That was what. Oh yeah, of course I told her. Oh, yeah. Told her after. Oh my God, he was brilliant. You should have been there. And, but so there was other stuff. There was like Prince. I remember when I was a young guy, I bought the Love Sexy album by Prince. Yeah. It was the one where he's naked on the cover. Mm-hmm. And I had that in my bedroom at home, my parents' house. And I came back from school one day and my mother pulled me aside and said, I'll tell you something, she says, I don't like the cover of that Michael Jackson album. And so that, so all this kind of stuff. And then there was another one about Leonard Cohen where I was in a tryst, shall I say. Mm-hmm. And the person in question, the person I was there with, stopped for a minute just to put on a Leonard Cohen album. And as things progressed the way I was hoping they'd progress, I began to think, ooh, not only am I listening to Leonard Cohen, this was a slightly older lady than me, not only am I listening to a Leonard Cohen song, I'm actually in a Leonard Cohen song at the moment. And anyway, so it was all this kind of stuff that I had written. And I had a friend, Roisin, who I'm actually going out to dinner with tomorrow evening, who at the time was the commissioning editor for Hot Press. And she had seen these things. And she said to me one night when we were out, hey, you know, maybe you should try and write for us. Now, what happened when she said that? On the outside, I went, oh, yeah, okay, that's pretty good. But on the inside, I was going, oh, my God, that'd be fucking fantastic.
Really?
So what she did was she took these pieces and a few other things and she gave them in to the owner, editor of Hot Press. And I don't know, he must have said, yeah, all right, give him a try. And so that's how I started.
Fantastic.
So I did a couple of album reviews.
So I always think that's a great way to look at the music trade in general. It's always like...
I was discovered.
You don't just get discovered by sitting there scratching your ass and looking out the window, although I know that's a big part of your process.
It is a huge part, yeah.
But I think in the music trade, putting great
that
stuff...
That window over there, folks, that's the magic window.
I know
it's
that.
Like play, it's like play school, used to be on television. What's going on through the magic window? And you also have to scratch your ass, which is impossible if I had those barbed wire pants, so I won't be wearing them.
I can probably still do my gig without scratching my ass, but you...
We all know my arse is more ample than yours anyway, so it would take an extra bit of barbed wire.
And also, it seems to be more itchy, a lot more itchy.
Well, that's age, but the and also the cost of steel or whatever barb is
yeah, it's his own element. It's just
it's probably related to Barbie, is it?
I
something
think so,
like that.
Yeah, this way, yeah. Barbiturates and all sorts.
Well, sorts of things. Anyway, sorry, what were we talking about?
I can't remember actually. I was going to ask you. I was going
to. Oh yeah, you're asking me about my great start to my glorious career.
Yes. So what I was going to say was. I think in music as well, like, or in any of the arts, you do stuff and you do stuff because you enjoy doing it, and then you put it into the universe, and that's how you get discovered, isn't it? It's obvious that you, to gain any sort of momentum, there's got to be something artistic in the center of it, or else, you know. So the questions that I always get asked, and I've been asked this by most recently by a gentleman who lives in my village. Can you help me and advise me on how to...
Let's call him Mr. Toblerone or something like that.
Royston Toblerone.
Toblerone, yeah.
Royston Toblerone down the road. He runs The Florist. I went in to get some flowers.
Funded by a suspicious amount of gold indeterminate origin.
I mean, I don't know where it all came from, but there's, yeah. And so I went to buy some flowers because I was attending a funeral. And he said, well, look, if you...
Seems fair.
If you can advise me and guide me through the pitfalls of the music trade, the flowers are on me. And I was like, yeah, cool. Just send me an invoice.
Bloody blah, blah, blah. Yeah, give me the flowers.
Then give us the flowers and I'll send you a link to Justin Hawkins Rides Again.
I have had the odd person come up to me when I'm drunk and say, oh, you should listen to our band. It's very rare.
Yeah.
And I remember a friend of mine took me aside one time because I did kind of lose my temper with one person who did that, which is terrible. And another guy was going, I was saying, yeah, well, look, it's the songs that are important. Make sure your songs are good. That's your start, first of all. If the songs are no good, you can forget it. Doesn't matter what you do. You can have the best marketing team in the world. If the songs are crap, forget it. Mm-hmm. And then I shouldn't say this in case they're listening, but then they sent me the songs and they were fucking terrible. But anyway, like doing that, when I started doing the writing stuff, I mean, I really found very quickly that I really liked doing it.
Yeah.
Really liked doing it. And it did kind of change. It did change my life a bit. A lot, actually. Because all through lockdown, I was working all the time, just doing stuff for the sake of doing it. Mm-hmm. And I really liked it. And you know that, like for the first half of lockdown, I did a lot of... I was very enthusiastic about my drinking, and that kind of dropped off without any kind of soul searching or anything like that. It just kind of ebbed away a small bit.
Yeah,
not completely, but
happening in real time. You know, I've watched you neck a couple of bottles of Aldi wine for most of 22 and a bit of 21 as well, I'd say. And then
you have, but then a producer that was working on that particular I don't like to use the word show, but I suppose that's what you could call it, kind of took me aside at one stage and go, yeah, have you any idea what you're saying at about 2 a.m? No.
Well, they were long episodes. So we were doing long form, like really long form stuff. And it was...
Well, we used to make Bruce Springsteen look like he was just arsing around. We did four. I think we did a 4-5 hour show one night.
Your eyes looked like piss holes in the snow.
Yeah,
you were down to the last of the Aldi wine, and you were pretty pissed off about that one.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah,
it was great fun. I mean, the thing about what we did during lockdown was I was thinking about that yesterday, actually, when you sent me a message about this, is how much. You know, I know people who were watching that, some people anyway, they used to tell us they were looking forward to it every week. But I was looking forward to it every week as well, because it really was a great thing. Anyway, I don't know how we get on to that.
Yeah.
Where was it? What was I talking about? You were actually, when we were talking about my glorious writing career, you were the first non-Irish person I interviewed.
Aha, because I remember this day so clearly.
Yeah. This is in 2017 as well, I think.
So that's, is the album that had Solid Gold on it. So that's from Pyma Smile. I can remember.
That's right.
Like, I'm always reluctant to talk to journalists, and not because I dislike them pathologically, but more because I can't.
It's a
really
lot of that.
It's a bit of that, though. I mean, it's not just that, but it's just like, also, I'm lazy. And usually they want to do it on like a show day, and I've got other stuff to think about on show day. I don't necessarily want to do that, you know. So I think I was probably a bit reluctant to come and meet you anyway.
You seem to be.
Did I?
When I met
you. Shit.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
You didn't look overexcited, I'll put it that way.
But that's my vibe, isn't it? My bored look is kind of like, that's what I do.
Yeah. No, I remember that Roisin again, she said, she rang me up and said, what do you think about interviewing Justin Hawkins? And I said, who? I know, I said, she said, of The Darkness, are you a fan? And I said, yeah, I am a fan. And you know, I was a genuine fan. I had tickets for the show and all that you were on that night. And I'd seen you several times before. I have the albums here. I was a fan. Ever since a friend of mine came into the pub one night in 2003 with a t-shirt that said, this is in the box set, this whole story, t-shirt that said The Darkness. And I said, what does that mean, The Darkness? And he says, this is a great rock and roll band and you're going to fucking love them. And he was right. But yeah, so she said, listen, would you go and interview him? And I said, yeah, of course. And she said, I think if I put Justin Hawkins and Pat Carty in a room, there'd be some good laughs. That's a nearly direct quote.
Is that what she said?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's nearly a direct quote. Wow. And we did. We had a good laugh that day. I remember that. Yeah.
But we were laughing all the way through that thing.
Yeah,
and
pretty
I remember
much, yeah.
The transcript had to be heavily edited because there was also a lot of salacious tales.
Well, no, that wasn't as bad as the second one. The second interview we did, just to give people a bit of background, that was in 2017. And then Christmas of that year, an editor suggested to me that I do a humorous article about the 20 greatest Christmas songs of all time. Mm-hmm. So it was up to me to pick what was on it. And of course, I picked the Christmas song, whatever it's called.
The Christmas one, yeah.
The Christmas song, yeah. And so I got in touch with the PR who was working for you guys in Ireland at the time. And I said, look, could you put a message through? I don't think I had your phone number at the time. Can you put a message through? I'm sure you didn't. Why would you give it to me? Can you put a message through to Justin and say, look, if I can talk to him for 5 minutes or 10 minutes,
yeah.
I just need, it'll just be part of this article where we ask some questions about the Christmas song, right? Yeah. So, message gone through. I don't know whether you recognize the name or not, probably not, but you said, yeah, listen, publicity, great, let's do that, right? So at Christmas, in this very apartment, in this next room, I had to ring you at 1 o'clock in the afternoon or something like that. And a friend of mine was staying with me. And I said, listen, go off into the other room for a minute, will you? Because I have to do this. It'll only be for 5 minutes. I have to do this call. And got through to you. And I do believe we talked for about an hour and a half. And yeah.
I remember that.
And that was nearly all, almost none of that was usable. Because that was just gossip about everybody.
You know what, though? It's like, I think...
have you ever met this guy? Well, he's a real bollocks. Yeah,
yeah. But I think it's like, I very seldom get to speak to anybody like on that, about that stuff and at that level and you're often sort of in a situation with a journalist where you're biting your words, you know,
and it's hard
to do those things, but I'm kind of media trained. I can handle myself now and I know how to not upset everybody. But when I talk to you, I get the vibe that what you're looking for is a load of old bollocks. And I can give you that
because
you're the only person I know who knows how to sort of handle it. And
well, there was stuff, there was plenty of instances in that because I'm sure I have the recording somewhere. Which I will sell to Darkness fans for a lot of money.
Sure.
But there was a lot of things in that where you went, I got to tell you a story about this guy. You can't use this. You can't use this. You can't use this bit.
Yeah, but all the stories involve me. They're not just, it's not gossip.
No,
these are all...
Well, it was. Some of it was.
Well, one or two of those probably were, yeah. But,
yeah,
you know. The really outrageous stuff has involved me, I expect. So,
yeah, you know. Well, it involved several people. A lot of it was, I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, was very sexual. And... But it was good. It was good, clean fun.
Good, clean.
And, it just
a good, clean retelling of some dirty fun.
Yeah, it just kind of, I think our friendship blossomed from there. Because I remember my mate came in and he said, hey, I heard some of it. And it just sounded like two old mates just gossiping in a pub, you know. He says, is that what interviewing is like? I said, no, it's not like that at all. That's not what it's like at all. Normally it's like trying to get blood out of a stone. Mm-hmm.
You're trying to put the blood back in the stone.
Basically,
I don't know why I was doing that with probably, two fingers.
I think we probably discussed that technique as well. But but that's how it happened. And then the article I did about when I went on the road with you guys, and people were saying, oh, that was very good.
Oh, yeah, that was fun though, wasn't it? You were on the tour bus with us.
No, it was great. I had a great time, yeah. And someone where I ended up naked on the tour bus. And,
yeah, you did, yeah. And I think scratching your ass, if I'm not mistaken.
There was a bit of that. But like a few bands said to me, oh, I thought that was very good. We'd like to do something like that. And you go, yeah, okay, yeah. And you're thinking, yeah, the problem is you're not the darkness, you know?
Yeah.
it doesn't really work like that, you know? It's you know, I can't make you be good fun. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't. Yeah.
I mean, I just think it's like.
I remember. A guy
do you
from
feel? Like, I mean, because we're pretty old school in the way we approach touring, really. Aren't we? I mean, I'm a sober guy, but I think the bus is a fun place, and you know,
it's a good laugh. Yeah, and we had a great laugh. I mean, I remember that was the first time I met Rufus and It was the first time I met Frankie. It was the first time I met Dan. And I remember meeting Rufus, first of all. And I did say at the time, you know, because obviously I knew who he was and I knew what his background was. Mm. And I thought, there's a good chance this fella would be a bollocks.
Yeah.
You know, because he's a, you know, and I, Rufus, if you're listening, you know I don't think this at all. But he's going to be a bollocks. And he was just a great guy. And I think within 5 minutes of I met him, he went, come on, we go and get a drink, you know? And, you know, we went off. Although I must say, Rufus, if you are watching, because I know that I follow him on Instagram and I see all these pictures just this week of he's in some Paradise Island somewhere. Mm. He's a very hard man to like.
I know we're on this, the Rufus topic. I know you love him.
Yeah. But I do love him.
He's a good looking guy. And
oh, stop.
You know, but as a writer, if you're like obliged, say for example, Paolo Nutini, a good-looking man, yeah. Lovely voice.
I've written about several times. Yeah.
I mean, I think you're good at this, but do you ever think that there's a temptation for journalists to try and do a slight takedown on somebody that's kind of got it all, like the looks and the dance moves and the talent?
Well, I have called Paolo Nutini a bastard a few times in print. I said, like his last record came out, and I really liked it. I really like him, and. I said, yeah, he's written these songs, he's got this voice, and he looks like that. Just look at him. I was saying to some Rich, just look at him. Look, there's a picture. There's probably a picture just up above this. Look at him. What a bastard. You know.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think if he was crap and he looked like that, well, obviously he'd look like that, then I would probably, yeah, I'd be more anxious to go to town on him then, probably. Yeah. But the fact that I really like him, it's the same with Rufus. I happen to think Rufus is a brilliant drummer. Yeah. I haven't seen him close up several times, and I know how good he is. And I also saw him, before I knew him at all, working with Queen. You know, the time I saw you guys supporting Queen here in Dublin. And, you know, he's a really fantastic drummer, great guy. Yeah. I really didn't want to like him, but I do like him. Yeah.
Yeah. It's difficult to dislike, isn't he?
I mean, with you, it's different because you're unique looking.
Yeah, my visage has a more selective appeal. So
yeah, you don't have that handicap.
Well, I don't even have to be good. You still like me.
You know, I did. I remember Dan saying to me, I think it was in Frankfurt or one of the places where I turned up to see you, and Dan was, "Oh, Pat's here, right?" And you know, Dan is. I think Dan has only recently come around to accepting that maybe. You know, I'm okay at the maybe okay. And I remember he said to me one time, he said, "Oh, you are here." And he said it in a kind of way, I said, "Well, what's the problem?" He says, "Well, Justin's going to show off even more now because he knows you're here. You know, he's going to be even worse tonight because you're in the audience," which is true.
I definitely went on some dramatic monologues that night.
I do. The only thing I
wasn't
doing
it to impress you, I was doing it to impress Pia.
Well, that's true. Pia is my partner, ladies and gentlemen, my lovely partner from Germany. That's why we're in Frankfurt. I do remember in Belfast, introduced me from this. I was down at the front and he introduced me from the stage and said, "Well, we have a guest here tonight. Ireland's greatest living writer," you know, which even I thought was a bit of an exaggeration. "Ireland's greatest living writer, Mr. Pat Carty."
And I didn't say that. I said Ireland's greatest living writer, who's better than a lot of the dead ones as well.
That's what you said, yeah. And you said it, I think you said the same thing in Dublin, but the night before in Belfast, and it was just like, it was like someone had mentioned, what did I say in the article? It was like someone had mentioned bestiality during a eulogy or something like that. It just went all quiet. It was a sound. If tumbleweeds make a sound, that's all you could hear.
No, but then after a while, I heard someone coughing and then someone at the back, "Woo!" Yeah.
play a song. Same thing in Dublin. It just went like, there was a lot of people down the front going, who is that guy? You know?
Yeah, but in Dublin, you were lording it up in the Royal Box.
Oh,
though,
well, that time, that was good. Yeah, yeah. That was in the Olympia. I was very drunk. And Justin said something from the stage. He said, "There's Pat Carty up there." He was playing Solid Gold and said, "Oh, this one's for Pat Carty, my friend up there," or something. And I got up and gave a regal mayoral wave. There's a load of people down. Like, what the fuck off? That was funny.
Yeah, those were the days, eh?
That was good fun. Yeah. We'll have that again. I'll do it again in December.
Yeah.
When the darkness are in Dublin. Yeah, absolutely.
Exciting.
So any more questions, Justin?
I've got loads of questions.
We're drifting. We're drifting.
Honestly, we haven't answered any of the things.
Good luck to the person editing this.
Okay,
yeah.
What's the best thing about being a journalist?
Getting to write. I mean, what's cool is, when people send you music, so sometimes like that Elvis Costello thing I was talking about the other day, you get something nice like that through the post, or like I've got Rolling Stones box sets sent to me by record companies, and I'm so grateful to these people if they're listening, because they don't have to do that anymore. Stream is what they normally send you.
And sometimes you normally get people, like a very
a link,
closely guarded link with a passcode and stuff.
And like, you know, so they send you out stuff like that. Sony have always been very good to me, Warner's, Universal, all these people. And that's really cool. And then doing the book stuff as well, I do a lot of book. I do at least normally.
So basically, you're saying the freebies.
Well, it's free stuff that you want. I mean, you know, you get sent stuff that you don't want, but just getting stuff like that is really nice. And meeting people, like say you are sitting down to interview The Edge.
And you've done Richard Thompson, The Edge, and all sorts of people.
Elvis Costello, Paul Weller, / Johnny Marr. Meeting people like that.
Do you ever say, you know, one of my mates is Justin from the? Do you ever do that?
I did say it to Richard Thompson.
Did you? You must have gone who?
No, I said, look, I know you. Do you know who the Darkness are? I said to him first one. He said, yeah. And I said, well, I was telling him. He said, well, Justin and I sometimes play guitars together. You know, he's a friend of mine, and he always does Vincent Black Lightning, 1952. He's always does that song, and you could just see his face going.
That's cool.
And he just went, yeah, really? I said, yeah. And he said, well, that's, he was delighted. He really was complimented.
That's really
great.
Cool.
He was complimented by it.
Wow.
But yeah, getting to do stuff like that. But the main thing is, and this might sound like I'm being pretentious. Well, first of all, it's nice getting paid to write. That's nice too. But not very well, of course, but it's nice to get paid. And but getting to write stuff. Sometimes you write something and knowing when it's finished is difficult, probably like recording a song, I don't know. And then you read it back and, you know, nobody might ever read it. Two people in the world might ever read it.
It's usually sometimes me and you, to be fair.
Yeah, usually. But sometimes you read stuff back that you do and you go, hey, that's not bad. That's pretty good.
And so it's a creative process for you then.
It is a creative process. Yeah. It is. And it's an outlet, a creative outlet, which I was missing maybe beforehand, which maybe made my life.
So that's what you mean by changing your life then. It's not
less
Lamborghinis.
Less happy, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I was leaning on that alcoholic crutch.
Maybe that's why it's dropped off now that you're doing a lot more of it.
No, I haven't. No, the crutch is over here somewhere. I haven't put it away.
I didn't imagine
as
for
you can
a moment.
See here, you can probably see a nice selection in the background.
A few crutches back there, yes, right.
Yeah.
All right, so if that's the best thing, what's the worst thing about it? Is it responsibility?
Do you ever feel
like the burden of being the tastemaker, or you know?
No, because I'm not.
Do you ever feel like you have to say the thing that's cool? Do you have to pander to your audience? Like if you're writing for classic rock, do you have to sort of have a pro? You know,
I've never knowingly done that. I don't think
because you can't.
Like I've turned stuff down. I've turned stuff down where I thought, well, my opinion won't be needed there. For want of a better way of putting it. And so I'm lucky because I have a day job, as you know. So I have the luxury of turning stuff down when I don't want to do it. If there's someone I'm just not interested in, that happens now and again.
Well, that's good. So that means everything you write, you're doing it from a passionate standpoint because you give a shit about
it. Yeah, most of it. Yeah, certainly. And I have to pick my battles because of time restrictions and all that. But the worst thing about it is sometimes you write something that you think is really good. And this has happened several times. And it goes out, whether it be on social media or the web or a magazine, and there's just zero response to it. You know,
the chasm.
So it just dies a death. So it's something you think is you've worked on, and there's been several things like, you know, I've written very long things.
Yeah, but those things are there for all eternity, though, aren't they? I mean,
they are. Yeah, but you know, this is the problem with social media. So it goes up on whatever it is, and you know, it's been sitting there a week, and it gets one like, or and then you can see how many people have actually clicked on it, and it's maybe three people, and you go, oh, for fuck's sake, that's disheartening. I'm sure it's the same thing.
I don't
on a much
know.
Grander
yeah,
scale.
I think
if you work your arse off on a record
but
and
I
then
think,
it goes out, and
but yeah, but this I think making a record and writing an article.
Well, very different. Sorry,
yeah,
course,
I mean,
yeah.
Okay. What I was going to say was that
I didn't. Sorry, I'm not trying to big myself.
No. I wasn't trying to. That wasn't what I was trying to say. Actually, I think what I'm saying is like the amount of passion and emotion that you put into an article that a million people look at is the same as the amount you put into one that the free people look at. So it's disheartening because you haven't found your audience.
Not necessarily. I could put up a picture of some kittens and that would probably get them.
Yeah, but that's the nature. Well, that's art versus content. That's another argument.
Yeah. But I mean, no, the thing that does reassure me is that and that's happened a lot to me, and I've had to get used to it, and everybody who does this kind of stuff has to get used to that. But I have read back on some of those things and gone, I was right. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I think
which is just, you know me, I'm a big headed guy, you know, so
I think nowadays it's different in terms of like music. Like if we did an album and nobody bought it, I don't think I would care.
Well, you have a different outlet there because you will go on tour then, and then there will be the people. Like when you, like I've seen you many times.
Yeah, I suppose that's different. You wouldn't go and do a reading of an article.
Exactly, yeah. And no, but you'll go out and, like, as I remember when Easter Is Cancelled was coming out, and you told me, yeah, we're going to play the whole album in the first half of the gig. Mm-hmm. And I probably said to you, ooh, okay, all right.
Yeah.
And I remember even in the gigs I saw on that tour, as the tour went on, the response got better and better to it. So, the point you were making, there is other ways for you to get feedback on that.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying, what happens with me is sometimes they just die a death completely.
Right.
And you think, that's disappointing.
Yeah.
Because I thought that was good or whatever. Okay. But you have to be reassured by the fact that, you know, you think it's good. And if you, and I know people might listen to this and go, God, he's got a huge ego, hasn't he? Yeah, he does. But the other thing is, I mean, you have to try and be good, right?
Of course you do. You've got to believe in yourself. Self-belief is that's the only reason why...
You can't do anything if you don't have self-belief.
Yes,
you can't put up a shelf if you don't believe you can do it. So
whether you believe you can do it or not, you're right.
Well, some shelves in this place where obviously my belief was misplaced.
I mean, I still have faith that those shelves will one day be load-bearing. I mean, not at the moment, but, you know.
Yeah, not much of a load, small load.
when someone who knows what they're doing comes and modifies what you've done. So when you interview somebody, what kind of stuff are you trying to find out before?
Well, the problem is, I suppose, when you're interviewing someone, you know, depending on who it is, they've probably done that day. They've probably done 10, 15 interviews. If they've been doing it for a couple of days, they've probably done... They might have done 100 interviews, who knows? And you can see it sometimes when you're talking to people that they have set things that they want to say, and that's it. And no matter what, it reminds me of when I used to do exams in school, that you'd have learned some stuff off. And no matter what the question the examiner set, you were going to put this stuff in because that's the stuff you knew. And sometimes interviews are a bit like that. So you're trying to get something a bit different out of them. Some people go in with 100 questions written out, and you know, determined to get each question. I don't tend to do that, and that annoys some people. I remember being asked by someone, have you got your questions ready? And I said, well, I've got my first question, and that's really the way I try and do it. So what you're I'm not very good at interviewing, to be honest with you, but what I try and do is try and get some sort of conversation going.
Yeah.
So maybe that way I'll get something else out of them. Yeah. You know, like, and when I was talking to some people, like, let me think of some good examples. You know, you try and get across, it's not like you can be friends with them, but you're trying to get across that I have some idea what I'm talking about. I'm on your side.
Yeah.
I don't care about your sex life really, even though my editor might be saying, ask him about his sex life.
Yeah.
You know, I want to know about these records that I love, and I want to know about these books that I like or whatever it is. So you try and get a conversation going. And sometimes that's hard. If someone is giving you 15 minutes, it's nearly impossible. That's why I would say the Richard Thompson one, he was very generous with his time. We were supposed to be talking we talked for 2 hours. And
was it all stuff? Was it him going like, I'll tell you a story about this guy, but you can't put it in? Was it all that?
No, it wasn't that. But I mean, he was great because, say, I could ask him about his religious views. And I said, look, just as someone who's completely outside of that and I don't really understand it, can you explain it to me? And he took the time to do it. So if you have time with someone, I think you get a better one. You're trying to get a conversation. It doesn't always work. Sometimes it falls on its arse completely. And at that point, I wish I did have 100 questions written down, and I don't. So sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, just get a dialogue going, I suppose.
Just try and make it a bit different, you know, than every other one.
Okay, I've got a few more questions here, but we're running out of time, so I don't know whether to...
Keep going. You know, keep sure this can all be edited.
Or, you know what, we can do another episode. another time. But quick fire round. We'll do the quick fire.
Yeah. Okay. Now listen, we have to work in some arse jokes here because there hasn't been enough of them so far. Yeah.
We did talk about arses a bit. We've done like
I think for the real hardcore fans of the old show, they'll be very disappointed.
I know, but we'll do an arse centric episode. I think.
I think the worldwide web should know about the arse transplant thing that was going on.
Should, actually. All this, yeah. But yeah, we'll definitely have to spend more time explaining that. Okay,
quick fire round. That would need an hour on its own.
Yeah. Right, this is going to be really quick.
Okay,
ready?
I'm ready. Yeah, go ahead.
What were you listening to today?
The Pretenders' new album, because I was writing about it, and also I was putting together a radio show, which started off with the Flaming Lips.
I believe in a thing called. Oh yeah, yep.
Yeah, Flaming Lips. It had the Black Crowes in it. It had
which Black Crowes song did you put on?
Thorn of My Pride from the second album.
I love the second album.
I love that album. And
okay, who produced it?
George was it? No, it wasn't George Drakoulias.
Was it? George Drakoulias.
Yeah, I thought he did the first one. I didn't know he did the second one because it sounds so different from the first one.
It's awesome.
Yeah,
record.
I think that's their best album.
I think they just had more money to spend on amps and there's more tonal.
Yeah,
variety.
But they recorded it. They recorded it in a week. They did it in a week.
Sensational record. I love that.
Yeah. See, when you're good, Justin, you don't need to be doing it for 6 months.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know. But
There was loads of stuff like, you know the way my radio show is, it goes all over the place. So there was loads of stuff like Roxy Music was on it. It finished with the Beastie Boys. So it was a whole variety of stuff. So that's what was listening today. Anyway.
Okay.
Sorry.
Best song you've heard this year?
Ooh. New song?
Best song you've heard this year? I don't know if it can be. Maybe it's a new one you hadn't hitherto. It's got to be one you've only heard for the first time this year, I think.
I like a lot of the new Blur album very much.
Okay, with the Narcissist and all that stuff.
Yeah, the first song on it's called The Ballad. I really like that.
Okay,
yeah, that's nice.
Great.
But I don't know if it's the best one. It's the one just comes into my head.
Okay, so best album of the year is probably the Blur one then, right?
It's up there. It's a good one. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I haven't done as many album reviews this year as I normally do. So, Yeah, that's a good one. That one just comes into my head now.
Okay. The most overrated artist of all time.
Overrated?
Mm-hmm. This is a tough question because this is another thing that I should probably ask you about is like when you critique in a negative way, do you think worry about backlash from their fan base or do you?
Well, because Ireland is so small and the Irish music scene is so, everybody knows each other, you know? Mm.
Yeah, but I'm talking about, you can have an international act in this.
Yeah, I mean, there are several Irish acts, and they actually know this. There are people in bands who notice what I think. There was one funny one, there's a guy, I won't mention his name, a lovely guy, and he's in a band.
This is a bad start.
No, wait for it. He's a real nice guy.
And I can hear a butt coming, by the way.
No, he's a real nice guy. But I don't like the music that his band makes. And he knows this, you know, because we've met each other several times. I've interviewed him a couple of times. And I was down at a festival, and we do public interviews at this festival. So I'd met him on the Saturday, and he said, oh, yeah, we're doing a public interview with you tomorrow. And I said, yeah, I'm the one who's doing the interview. And he said, you? But you don't like our band. And I said, yeah, but don't worry about it. We'll have a good laugh. So, there's several Irish, high profile Irish acts that I don't really get. International one, let me see. Who do I think is
most overrated artist of all time?
Of all time?
All time. This is supposed to be quick fire. Come on.
Yeah, okay. I'm not crazy about anything Radiohead did after the Bends.
What?
I think
Jesus.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Okay, if you had to choose...
Pink Floyd I never got.
Okay.
I don't understand.
You can have that then. If you had to choose three albums that everyone should have in their collection, what would they be?
Oh my God. Exile on Main Street is the first one by the Rolling Stones. Yep. Right, it's the greatest record of all time. Okay. That's all there is to it.
Hotel California?
Absolutely not. What else do I think is brilliant? Again, this is just off the top of my head. Voodoo by D'Angelo, I think, is an absolute masterpiece. There's so many, I don't know. Sign of the Times by Prince.
Great.
There you go.
You did it. Okay, best live artist you've ever seen?
There are several vying for the front, but probably, given this summer, still probably Bruce Springsteen.
The best
and the E Street Band, by the way, not Bruce Springsteen on his own.
Not Stringy.
They're essential. They're essential.
Yeah. Best new artist that people should be paying attention to.
No idea. Jesus. You know me and new music. I don't like anything since about You know, I still do, people. I still think when I mention, no, I still think when I mention Voodoo by D'Angelo, I always think, oh, that makes me sound cool. That's a new record. That's from 2000. best new artist. Is there anything I've heard that I really liked recently? I can't really think of anything. Sorry.
Okay. I'll put you down as really. Pass.
There's
on
a,
that
there's
one.
A, there, I tell you what, there's a good Irish songwriter called C-Mat, and I like the cut of her jib. She's kind of an indie Dolly Parton vibe going on. She's good. She's up and coming. I think people hear a lot more of her. I like her.
Cool. Love it.
C-Mat. C-M-A-T. Check that out, folks.
All right. And then the last one of the quick fires. An artist you love, but you don't tell people you listen to because you might be slightly embarrassed about it.
That doesn't exist. I've never... You know that's true.
Yeah, but that's why you're so vocal about your love of the
darkness. I've never understood this idea of guilty pleasures. How can music be a guilty pleasure? I've never understood that. Mm. How can any pleasure be guilty? Well, you know, apart from some of the people I mentioned early on. But you know what I mean? You want to be in my gang. But, yeah. Right. But no, music, no, I never understood that. If you like it, that's what I love. Like, say, you know, I've been at shows that I didn't care for the people who were playing, and I see people down the front having the absolute time of their lives. And that's what it's all about. And you got to include that in reviews as well. It's go, look, these people are having a bloody great time. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's true. That's, yeah, almost objectivism, isn't it? I mean,
almost. Like, they must have, like, say Coldplay. If Coldplay are playing four nights in Croke Park, they've got to have something going for them.
Imagine if everyone's booing all the way through.
I wouldn't think that's likely.
It would be great, though.
Listen, before we go, I want to apologise. There's not enough arse gags in this
Nearly
thing
enough,
at all.
Though,
we have to do this again.
We have to.
We have to go over why the industrial unrest that was caused by our falling out. All that kind of stuff. And you know,
we will. We'll do another one.
I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll put it open to a public vote. Ladies and gentlemen of the internet. Where's my camera? Ladies and gentlemen of the internet. That's what the comments underneath this are for. If you want to see more
arse
of
jokes.
This. Yeah, and you want to hear more arse jokes. Well, then vote with your feet underneath this. And by the way, like and subscribe and all that shit.
Hey, I'm about to do that.
Oh, sorry.
Justin Hawkins rides again. Or on chord. Call again.
Yeah.
Ready?
Seventh.
Oh, yeah. Go on.
Again.
I put a minor seventh in just for you. Thanks, Pat. Pat Carty. Well done.
Nice one, Justin.
Thank you so much for watching. What do you think about music journalism? Do you have any particular music journalists that you follow that help you curate your music listening experience? Use the comments section here to tell me what you thought. And if you want to read or listen to any of Pat's work, I've put links in the description to find those as well. So I'll see you next Monday for another episode of Justin Hawkins Rides Again, the podcast. I think I'll be talking to Frankie Poulin. I'm just twisting his arm to try and get him to sit down with me. Might do an in-person, actually. So that'll be fun. In the meantime, lots of love to you and adieu. Cheers. Thank you for listening to Justin Hawkins Rides Again, the podcast. Next time, I think we'll probably be talking to Frankie Poulin, the bass player from Darkness. I'll see you next Monday for another episode. Cheers. Okay.